State of Washington Court of Appeals Division 1 is now in session. The Honorable James R. Brennan presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. First up today is Pine Forest versus City of Bellevue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Steve Vanderhoff. I represent Pine Forest. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. This is, and I'm sure you hear this frequently, but this is an unprecedented case, literally. There is no precedent for the government coming before the court and saying, we have purely a temporary use for this property. We don't contest that there is a guarantee out there that will save us money if we take the property temporarily. But nevertheless, we're coming to you to approve a permanent take of this property.
And just to be clear, we're only talking about one-third of the property, 80,000 square feet.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you concede there's public use and necessity as the other two-thirds.
Absolutely. And the record is replete with diagrams that show precisely what that two-third, one-third, how that two-third, one-third distinction is made, where the lines are drawn. There is undoubtedly and uncontestedly a public use for a road extension, an elevated road extension, and for railroad tracks.
And are the plans for the road extension, have those been finalized?
No. But there is, topographically, there is no way that it can go anywhere other than in an elevated fashion directly into an existing intersection. So that road, we know exactly where it's going to go from a western to eastern standpoint directly into the intersection at 120th and so, above railroad tracks.
So is it your position that the evidence shows that that there is no way that the road construction would in any way use the one-third of the property, or that the link would never use the one-third of the property?
Yes, the city's admitted that. The city has said we have no permanent use. This is purely for temporary construction staging that we need this one-third.
Well, for now, but don't they have evidence related to in the future?
They do not, and that's what distinguishes this case and makes it completely unprecedented, distinguishes it from the monorail case. The monorail case, there was a laundry list of possible permanent public uses, including paratransit, rider access, parking, a park. The station footprint in that case was not yet completed, and certain designs had contemplated taking the entire parcel for purposes of the station. So what's really important here is that you're dealing with a one-third portion of this property that's in a hole, literally in a hole, and it cannot be integrated into the 15th Street extension. It will not be integrated into Sound Transit's track. It's got to go from point A to point B, being the Spring District station across the street. And so there is more certainty about this public project than the vast majority of public projects at the condemnation stage. And topographically, it's impossible to use this permanently. And I guess most importantly, the city has repeatedly confirmed that it only has a temporary use. The city has taken the monorail case, and with the fact, disregarding the fact that there were possible public uses for the entire parcel that the monorail authority took, and disregarding the fact that there is no economic risk, as there was in the monorail case, where the cost of a temporary construction easement lease could eclipse the total value of a permanent take. Here, there's an unequivocal guarantee, and it's a very simple analysis. Pine Forest looked at the property and said, here's what it's worth in total, and here's what it's worth as a temporary construction easement with two-thirds of a total take. The difference between taking it totally and taking it only two-thirds of it with a temporary take was a 13% difference. And that 13% can be applied to any value that the city determines, that Pine Forest advocates for, or that a jury decides. It is an airtight guarantee. The initial October letter from Pine Forest outlining its position stated that there we would negotiate lease terms and lease value terms. The February 2014 letter was unequivocal, that the Sound Transit and the city could have unfettered access for as long as they needed it. We would like to discuss what the sunset and the horizon for the public use would be, but there would be no extra cost. That the risk of delay, the risk of a long period of construction staging was on Pine Forest. Those are two undeniable distinctions between the monorail case and our case. That's why this case is an unprecedented stretch and a request to this court to rubber stamp virtually any public use determination that any government entity could make.
What's your response to the argument that what you have done is mischaracterized your argument or characterized your argument as public use when, under the monorail case, the nature and extent of the condemnation is analyzed under a necessity, the necessity prong?
Yeah, I the monorail case did not overrule the Convention Center case, did not overrule Westlake, did not overrule any of the prior cases, and it was decided on its facts. And if you take a look in detail at the monorail case, public use was found at least in part not only because this is a rail project and therefore by definition public, but it looked at all of the facts. It looked at the fact that everything that the monorail authority was going to do on that parcel was related to a possible, maybe even probable, permanent use for rail purposes. So that's the argument on public use. But even if you take a look at the public necessity under a much more relaxed standard, yes, we still have the city willfully disregarding the fact that it will pay less if it takes this property temporarily. So we're making both arguments.
Well, so your second argument is the city has disregarded the proposal that you've just described.
It's not a proposal. It's an
uncontested. A guarantee, yes. As you've described it.
Absolutely. And instead, they've cloaked themselves in monorail saying, and even said, there's economic uncertainty. I mean, you couldn't get more willful disregard of the facts and circumstances before the city in making that decision. Not contesting that it's a guarantee, all the while claiming that, you know, there's this runaway future cost that it must avoid that makes it necessary for them to take the entire parcel.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jessica Skelton, and I represent the City of Bellevue, the respondent in this case. The trial court correctly concluded that the City of Bellevue needs private developer Pine Forest property in fee for two public projects, a transit project and a road expansion project. And that determination should be affirmed for two reasons. First, because it is without question an issue of necessity and not one of public use. And second, because this court and the trial court must defer to the city's legislative determination that it needs the property for a public project. And the reason for that is clear, because courts defer to the public agency that is overseeing and planning a project for issues such as the extent, duration, and time that an entity needs the property.
Do you concede that there's no evidence related to the city's intent to use the one-third of the property for anything other than a temporary use?
We do not agree that it's been conceded. In fact, our position would be that the record is silent on how the property would be used, and there's a good reason for that, and that's because the record reflects that at this point, the city is planning to construct its road project between 2030 and 2040. And the city isn't in a position to speculate on how it might use a portion of property 15, 20 years down the road. Pine Forest makes a lot of hay over the fact that there's some evidence, for example, in the monorail case, that there was some evidence about how the property might be used in the future. But it's important to note that in that case, the monorail court specifically determined that, in fact, there was no planned use for the property after the temporary use expired. And so that was what the monorail court took into consideration in determining that just the initial public use was enough to justify a public use for the property. And really,
Pine Forest argues in its brief that there was no serious discussion at any prior stage of an expansion, maybe the timing, but not that future plans might involve an expansion of the size?
Well, that's in the record at Clerk's Papers 131 and 430 to 31. It's the declarations of Rick Logwood, who's the project manager, who's both overseeing the city's execution of the light rail project and also the road expansion project. And he acknowledges that the permanent use areas, both by Sound Transit and the City of Bellevue, have not yet been established, and that in coordinating two significant projects like those projects, those areas can change. It is undisputed in the record, Pine Forest is correct, that, you know, in terms of the staging area that the city and Sound Transit intend to use, that they have not identified a public use in perpetuity for that portion of the property. But that's not what is required under Washington case law, and that's established both by
What case law?
The PUD v. NAFSE case, and also the Seattle Public Monorail case, where they both determined that a significant long-term temporary public use is sufficient to justify a public use. A public entity does not need to have a public use for property in perpetuity. That's not the standard. And in fact, a determination of the extent of property needed, including the duration that property the property is needed, is analyzed under the necessity prong, not the public use prong, as Pine Forest contends. And the reason for that is precisely the reasons that we were just discussing, which is that the agency is in the best position to determine how much of the property they'll need, how long they'll need it for, what the potential complicating factors might be that would arise that would extend their need. And so in this instance, the city simply wasn't in a position, as Pine Forest contends, to agree to a limited use. For one thing, it had committed to Sound Transit that it would provide Sound Transit with a property and fee. And for another thing, they aren't planning to construct their road project for another 15 years at this point. And although Pine Forest has indicated that it will be moved up and they know exactly where that project is going to be constructed, that's not what the record before this court reflects.
So you've touched on addressing the argument related to the proposal they made. And so one of the critical arguments they make related to necessity is that the city did not, it disregarded the proposal and didn't take that into consideration, and the record would support that. What's your response?
Our response is that the record is clear that the city engaged for a period of several years in discussions with Pine Forest over how the city might be able to coordinate these two significant public projects with Pine Forest. And for one thing, that's in the declaration of Matt Siegel, which is in the record before the court. And additionally, the record does not reflect that the city disregarded Pine Forest's even most recent proposal, which was provided to the city just a couple of weeks before the hearing on public use and necessity after the briefing was completed. In fact, the city had considered many of the issues that were raised in that most recent proposal, and for some of the reasons discussed, determined that it couldn't make that proposal work.
So was that proposal part of the evidence before the trial court?
The trial court accepted it as Exhibit 1, and I believe this court has that exhibit. If you do not, then I'm happy to defer that question to counsel for the petitioner. Okay. Additionally, the types of arguments that Pine Forest are making about Exhibit 1 and their recent settlement proposal are designed to reflect arbitrary and capricious conduct on the part of the city. That's not the standard by which the trial court or this court could overturn the city's legislative determination that it needs to take the property in fee. In fact, the standard is arbitrary and capricious conduct amounting to constructive fraud. And there's a distinction there, because in the body of eminent domain case law, constructive fraud is defined as where a public entity is acquiring property as a pretext for a private use. There is no evidence of pretext in the record here before this court. Pine Forest concedes not only that the city will put two-thirds of the property to a permanent public use, but that it will put the remainder of the property to a long-term public use for these transit and road projects. This is not the type of incident where courts would delve into the reason why a city is taking this property. This is not the Port of Everett case, for example, the only case that Pine Forest has cited where a court has overturned a public entity's legislative determination of necessity, because in that case, the port had no plan, no map, had not identified how the property would be used at all. Here, it's undisputed. The property will be used for a public use permanently in part and for a long period of time for the rest. And so there's no evidence of pretext and nothing that the trial court or this court could use to overturn the city's legislative determination.
What's the impact of the guarantee why isn't that a safeguard, against any economic risk to the city based on a construction easement?
Right. And so the proposal that Pine Forest made includes several parts. So not just the guaranteed cost savings, using their words, but it also required that the city would be able to compromise with Pine Forest on the valuation of the property. And it's in the record here that the parties are very far apart in their valuation of the property, nearly $9 million. But the guaranteed cost savings, which reflects that inflated valuation that Pine Forest has identified, actually only corresponds to the fact that the city would be taking a lesser interest in the property. That is a fee interest in a portion of the property and a temporary interest in the remainder of the property. So really that 13% cost savings that's identified by Pine Forest really corresponds to no savings at all. It only corresponds to taking a lesser interest in the property. And then in addition to that, the city evaluated, well, what would be the potential costs and complicating factors that would arise if we did go forward with constructing our road projects while Pine Forest was developing on their property at the same time. And those factors are all set forth in the record in the declarations of Mr. Logwood, but there are a lot of difficulties where you're trying to coordinate two significant public works projects with a private development. And taking all of those considerations into account, including the fact that the city couldn't guarantee, for example, that it would be able to use the property as long as it needed to. Now, Pine Forest has represented we'll give them an indefinite temporary easement. But in fact, Exhibit 1, which is the last settlement proposal that was made, says that Pine Forest will grant a temporary easement, quote, subject to the parties agreeing on a timetable that provides flexibility to the city and provides certainty that the property will be returned to Pine Forest. So there were just too many questions, too many issues, and Pine Forest and the city of Bellevue needed to be able to provide the property to Sound Transit by June of 2015. And so it made the proper and well-supported determination that it needed to take the property in fee simple. And the trial court properly affirmed that determination because there was no evidence of constructive fraud in the record. And in fact, at the hearing on public use and necessity, Pine Forest conceded that it was not arguing constructive fraud and that it was arguing only arbitrary and capricious conduct, which is insufficient to overturn a city's legislative determination of necessity. And the reason for that is pretty clear. It goes back to the policy of why courts defer to agencies in their determination of necessity. And the reason is, again, there's often a lot of grounds for dispute over public projects. Everyone has their opinion about where things should go, and it's very easy to say that things were disregarded or, you know, we didn't pay attention to their claims of cost savings. But at the end of the day, the city is in the best position to assess how and where and for how long the project should go forward and what it needs to do in order to ensure that that happens. And the trial court recognized that, and we would ask that this court affirm that as well. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll conclude my argument.
I think it's telling that the two cases that the city cites to support its position that it need not confirm a permanent use in perpetuity are the monorail case and the PUD of Grant County case. When in both of those cases, there was again, and I'm beating the gong again because it's being ignored by the city, there were permanent uses for those two pieces of property in the monorail and the PUD case. There was continuing power generation use in the PUD case, and there were all of the laundry list of permanent uses that I talked about in my opening in the monorail case. It simply is not the case that the truism that the government need not confirm how it's going to use the property until the end of time somehow applies to this case, where the city has confirmed absolutely no permanent use. It's manipulating the system to say that the record's silent. Well, we couldn't have said more times at the trial court level and at this level that the city has confirmed that there has no permanent use, and it's never come back with any outline of any possible permanent use. It's just said, look, we may not build this thing, and it was telling again that council's argument just before you said, we don't intend to build that road for 15 to 20 years at this point. Well, take a look at the topography. You've got the record before you. There is no way that road can be built after the track goes in. They're not going to build an elevated roadway over live rails They have to build it in conjunction with the track. And that's exactly the kind of factual analysis that both the city and the trial court disregarded. The conclusory statements of the city were accepted by the trial court. The trial court denied Pine Forest the right to discovery that was pending and due on the day of the hearing, of the public use and necessity hearing, 7 months before trial. There was no prejudice. This was not the Fruitland case that the city has cited in its brief to support the denial of discovery. The Fruitland case was a case that was set for trial after a public use and necessity hearing that was uncontested. It was set on February 14th. It didn't go to trial until February 26th, and counsel showed up on the day of trial and asked for a continuance. That's not this case. So at the very least, this case should be remanded so that we can delve into, as we indicated and outlined in our written discovery, the basis for the city's disregard of the 13% guarantee. Yes, the city is getting less, but the city has put forth absolutely no support for its claim that it needs more, that it actually needs this property on a permanent basis. This is an unjustified stretch of the monorail case, and we'd ask you to reverse and at the very least remand for additional discovery into these very important issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is State versus Wade.